Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen, and it is Friday, July 26th. So it's the last Friday of July, and everything today is cat ladies. Boy, the cat ladies are just exploding onto the internet, onto everybody's discussions. Well, I shouldn't say everybody. Obviously, Donald Trump doesn't want to know anything about cat ladies. In fact, I'm sure that Donald Trump is sorry that he ever heard of cat ladies or the person who started this cat lady business. I realize it was 2021 when this was originally said, but the funny part about it is J.D. Vance hasn't shown up somewhere in front of a camera and said, look, I'm really sorry I said that. That was dumb. Nope, not a word. Complete silence. And, you know, the thing about it is, sometimes people are completely tone deaf. And I'm not talking now about a singer. I'm talking about a broadcaster, a public speaker. I mean, sometimes people are just tone deaf. They just don't know what they're saying or how it sounds. When they say it, they don't know how it sounds. And I mean, I've heard broadcasters who are so oblivious to what's coming out of their mouths. And I'm not talking about the words. I'm talking about the sound. I'm talking about the cadence. They just don't get it. And I don't know why they've got that problem, but there are people like that. And I could tell you as an example, Jonathan Lemire, who does the early morning show before Morning Joe on MSNBC, when he started doing the early show, I guess it was maybe a couple of years ago now, he was one of these people who were real. He was really tone deaf. And I sort of felt bad for him, except somebody told him something. Somebody helped him along the way. And he's no longer like that. He has completely gotten control of what comes out of his mouth as a broadcaster and the sound of it and the cadence and the tone. He's right there. He's perfect. So no problem. Now, originally, he was a newsreader. And you know, there's a big difference between reading the news and talking on the air. Just a giant difference. And Jonathan Lemire is now the greatest example I can give you of somebody who just had to learn briefly, and he has gotten so good at it. When I hear him on the air, I love it, and I'm always happy that he has gotten this under control because I've heard people that I really like. I mean, they've got good sound. I mean, they have excellent ideas, but, like, the cadence is totally off, and it's like, woo, you know, something's off. Something's not right. And I'll tell you another person who was just like that, David Gregory. When he did Meet the Press, he was just totally off balance. He could never get where he needed to be. And then in came Chuck Todd, and Chuck Todd just had perfect pitch, just excellent. So that's an important thing. You know, when you get in front of a microphone, when you're talking to people, you want to sound right. And the reason that I really went to this today is because Kamala Harris has perfect tone. Absolutely perfect. And by the way, the peanut gallery needs to stop laughing back there. I'm just teasing, you know, of course. But here's the thing. She really does. And if you listen to her, if Forget what she's saying. Forget the words. Pretend that you like everything she says. I'm telling you, she's right on track. She sounds like a speaker. She sounds like a political leader. She sounds like somebody that when you listen to the words, that besides what you hear, that you're actually going to like the sound because it comes out great. Now, I know that there are some people out here who are making fun of her because they say they don't like her laugh. I don't honestly know what they're talking about, because what they are really saying is that they hate women. That's what they're saying. They just despise women. They don't like to hear women. They want women to go back where they belong, in the kitchen or somewhere, and just get out from behind either a stage or a microphone or a crowd or anywhere. They don't like women. So if you hear somebody start making fun of Kamala Harris, right away you can know this is just 100% misogyny, because the lady is really good. She's got that tone. I was driving in here about a half an hour ago, and I was listening to one of her speeches from today, and she was just spot on. Forget what she said. I understand there are people who disagree with her, and if you disagree with somebody, that's okay. But her tone was perfect. She is an excellent speaker, and I understand that there are people that want her to lose, and that's how we are in politics. But I can also tell you that the day will come when Kamala Harris is the president of the United States, and you'll want her to have that perfect tone as a leader of the country, talking to the world, talking to the country. It's important that your leader can speak well. And listen, that's really what did in poor Joe Biden at the end, because you cannot be the president of the United States coming up against a challenger like Donald Trump, who is certainly a psychopath. He's crazy. He's got screws loose, and he needs to find those marbles that are lost. All that's true. But he certainly resonates with that group that follows him that has, as they say, drunk the Kool-Aid. And they love it. And so what you need to do is you need to be much stronger than what Joe Biden was. And I'll say this, in listening to past clips from Joe Biden years ago, he was fine. He was a very good speaker. All that talk about the stuttering and so forth, it wasn't a problem. But in his later years, it has come back to bite him in a serious way. He slurs words. He mixes up words. He really has a problem. And he just was not strong enough to deliver the kind of speech that's necessary in order to really excite the masses. And I have to say that when you listen to not only how Kamala sounds, but you listen to the reports of what people think and the polling and the number of people that are volunteering for the campaign and all of the people who are talking about this just incredible enthusiasm that is now following her around. See, you can't deny that. Now, Donald's trying. I understand. He's trying. But look, if people say, wow, I'm inspired, then you just have to believe it. Now, if you just had a few people saying it, that would be different. And then you could say they're just talking their portfolio. That I understand that kind of thing. You know, as a stock market guy, you know, people who have bought, you know, a lot of IBM. Well, sure, they're going to talk up IBM. So that's talking up your portfolio. But see, that's not what's going on here. There are people who have come to Kamala Harris who were completely out of the Democratic Party involvement here. They were so upset that they just were talking about not voting. I mean, they just were doing nothing. And here's another way to count it up, because you got to look at the numbers. There were 200 people per day signing up to volunteer for the Democratic Party. 200 people per day. So in a week, that would be 1,400 people. In a month, 5,600. But suddenly, the day after Kamala was endorsed by Joe Biden, and she started talking, people went wild. They didn't just say, I love this lady, and talk their portfolio. They were enthused to the point that more than 28,000 people volunteered the first day after Joe Biden dropped out of the race. 28,000. Because they heard Kamala and they thought, wow, this is incredible. Now, there are polls out today. And I know that there are people on Donald's side who are going to hear these numbers and they're going to say, we still got it. We're going to win. But listen, you haven't seen everything yet. You've just seen the last few days. And these numbers have already grown really dramatically, but it's going to get bigger. So, for example, Joe Biden was down by 6-7 points. Kamala Harris in the same poll is now down 1 point. Joe Biden was down 9. Kamala Harris is tied. Several different polls, and she's come within 1 point or tied in every one of them. And in these others, Joe Biden was quickly falling behind. But that's all been reversed. This is a week. Wait for another week. Wait for a month. Wait until you get to the point where this becomes really significant. I think what you're going to see is amazing numbers on her side. Now, there are people who say that without anybody being the candidate, that generally we're looking at a 40-40 country, 40% Democrats, 40% Republicans, and that leaves 20%. So if that 20% all goes to one person, then it's a 60-40 race. And that never happens, or at least almost never. Unfortunately, for the Democrats, when Ronald Reagan ran the second time, he was in that 60-40 range. And so was Lyndon Johnson beating Goldwater back in 1964. So sometimes it happens, but mostly not. Well, Donald has got himself in a mess where, I'm not saying 60-40, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see 55-45, which in American politics is a landslide. 10 points in American politics is a landslide. Everybody knows it, and actually, Joe Biden came in pretty far ahead during his last election. Whatever it was, 5-6 points. It's up there. That's a high number. Hillary Clinton was 3. That's pretty good, but not enough, unfortunately, for all of us to get her elected. Sure, she won the popular vote by 3 million, but not enough to get her elected. But here's the thing. Kamala is another ball game. This lady has got that perfect tone, and she's got the right words. For example, you know that one of the things that she's pushing is freedom. Now, I know everybody says freedom, but again, in the case of Kamala Harris, this is catching on like wildfire as it spreads all over. People are just believing it, totally believing it. And in addition to that, look at the other thing she did the other day. And this is a perfect example of how perfect her tone is. She really knows how to play it because she talked about the fact that we're not going back. And she said it twice. We're not going back. Now, I listened to when she did it. She wasn't calling for the crowd to do anything, but the crowd went nuts. The crowd, tens of thousands of people, were screaming, "We're not going back." And you know what? We're not going back. We're not. She's right. And the crowd responded. And believe me, that's not just responding to the words. That's responding to her tone, because she's got a perfect pitch as a political speaker. Now, go out and listen to her, because I'm sure you're just listening to the words right now. But I want you to think about it when you listen to her. And you'll realize quickly that what I'm saying is true. And you may listen to some other people and realize when they don't have that pitch, when they just don't know what their sound is coming out like. And there are lots of people that are like that. Like I say, one of the main ones from the time I listened was David Gregory on Meet the Press. And it really bothered me because I like David Gregory. He's a nice person, smart person. But he just didn't have that pitch. Kamala Harris has got it. And it is going to go for her and for the Democrats a long way in going against Donald Trump, who absolutely does not understand anything about what he is saying, except for I would say this for Donald. I'll give him this much credit. I think he's scared out of his wits. I think he doesn't know what to do. He's testing all different things. Lion, Kamala, really? No, no one's hearing that. And this other business, you know, the cat ladies thing is, as I said at the beginning, it's so interesting because the first thing that J.D. Vance could have said, boy, I shouldn't have said that 3 years ago. I don't even know where it came from. I don't understand, but I said it. I know. But no, I don't believe that. Of course, you know, women who have children, women who don't have children, it doesn't matter. Everybody has a role to play in our society. But he's letting it stand. He has allowed it to stand, and by allowing that, he is encouraging people to make it something that he has to own in 2024. Every day that he doesn't speak out against the cat lady nonsense is another day that it becomes attached to not only J.D. Vance, but to Donald Trump. To Donald Trump, who, by the way, and again, this is what's so brilliant about Kamala. She has jumped straight to the rape story, and she is grabbing him on it every single time, every chance that she gets. She is wrapping it around his neck because, look, the man, as Kamala says correctly, was found to be liable for sexual assault. The jury didn't actually say the words rape. The judge did. The judge said that after hearing everything and hearing the jury and evaluating what was said, that they were saying clearly that Donald Trump raped E. Jean Carroll. That's what the judge said. And there are quotes everywhere on it, and he said it. However, Kamala is being fair. She is sticking to the actual New York reasoning, the words that were attached to what he did. And those words exactly said that Donald was liable for sexual assault because it is a civil case. Doesn't get him off the hook anyway, because I really love people to argue with me about those words. Now, I really don't want to talk about it on the air from this standpoint. I mean, if somebody calls in, and by the way, our phone number here today is 314-471-1968, 314-471-1968, and it's on the screen. And if you call in, I mean, you could talk about anything, so you could bring this up if you want. But I don't know why anybody would want to bring it up, because here's the discussion. You want to try to parse the words? You want to try to figure out what rape means and what it is that Donald Trump was said to have done for sure? Because I don't think you want to do that. Because I think if you do, you're going to find out that you're not cutting him any break for what he did. So you can sit here and try to figure it out and go through the anatomy and try to understand exactly what he did and what would be called rape in a criminal trial. I mean, you can do all that, but you're going to look stupid. So you don't want to do it. And it's not something that even needs to be on the air, because it's clear the criminal assault and rape are both forbidden by the law. You're not supposed to do it. And if you do it, it's a problem. And I can assure you that there's nobody in your family that you would like to have either raped or criminally assaulted, and certainly not by Donald Trump. So the man's in trouble, and Kamala is handling this beautifully, because she is wrapping it around his neck every time she has a chance to do that in a speech, because this man has done things that we just don't accept in our society. It's just not okay. Now, I want to talk about the trials in which Donald was found guilty and liable and so forth. And I don't want to spend too much time, but I do want to talk about it a little bit, because there's a lot of misunderstanding. And there are about 15 different people who have mentioned this to me in the last month. And the thing about it is, they all believe the same thing. Here's what they believe: that the judge in New York was against Donald from the beginning. And as a result of being against Donald, the judge, first of all, allowed things into the courtroom that he shouldn't have done, things which could be reviewed in the upcoming appeal that's out there right now. It's going to be heard in New York. That's one thing that they believe. They believe that during the trial that there were opportunities where somebody said, you know, they object, and the judge ruled in favor of the prosecutors. And so there's a belief that this judge was biased. But see, here's the problem. It's often seeming to be that way in a courtroom because, you know, a judge has certain beliefs about the law and follows the law. Now, when it gets to the appeal, I think it's going to be very clear that the appeals courts are all going to say that this case is done perfectly. No problems, no bias, nothing improper. Now, that doesn't mean that the judge could or could not have made some different choices in a way. Possibly so. But they do have latitude. So that's number one, is that they got that latitude. The other thing that's a problem is that the judge is a human being. And if Donald Trump is running around saying that the judge's family is no good, that the judge is no good, that they should be hurt, that they should be attacked, you know, all kinds of different things. I'm not saying that this judge did it, but I'm saying it wouldn't be surprising if a judge did it. Because, you know, you're not supposed to attack that judge. And an example, which I love to bring up, is baseball. You know, if you're out in the pitcher's mound and you're, you know, sticking your finger up at the judge, the umpire all the time, and then you throw something that you think's a strike and the umpire thinks that it missed by a hair, you know, he's probably going to not give you the benefit because you've been sticking that middle finger up in his face all game. So you just have to decide what you want to do. But at the same time, the judge does have latitude. And when it gets to the appeals court, I think you're going to find very quickly that this is going to be all considered fair game, what happened in that courtroom. Now, and by the way, so far there have been appeals made even during the trial, which were ruled on because of the legal rules, and the judge was okay. He didn't have any problems. But here's where there are problems, and this is in Florida. Aileen Cannon has already twice been brought to appeal at the 11th Circuit, and both times she was eviscerated by the 11th Circuit. They said, what you've done is wrong. You can't do it. Don't do it again. It's already happened twice. If it happens a third time, it is highly probable that she'll be removed from the case. And a lot of people right now, I mean, legal scholars are saying Aileen Cannon is on the way out because of what she did by dismissing this case. But we're going to find out. You're going to hear what the 11th Circuit says. And if the 11th Circuit says that Aileen Cannon was completely out of bounds and removes her from the case, then we're going to have a conversation with all of these Trump-supporting people about what bias is in a courtroom and what it isn't. Because I can tell you right now, what happened in New York was not bias. People are going to say it. Like I said, I've had 15 at least. If it were 20, I wouldn't be lying to you because it's that many. Everybody says the same thing to me. I guess some people heard it on the news and they believed it. But I can just tell you right now that a lot of this stuff wasn't even heard by the public because there was no microphone. There were no microphones in that courtroom in New York. The people who are saying this are people who were in the courtroom who were, I don't know, dressed up with blue suits and red ties as these little obsequious people following Trump because, I don't know, something wrong with them. But wait until you hear what these appeals courts say, because I think they're going to make it pretty clear as to who's in the right and wrong. And when you find out that Aileen Cannon's in the wrong and has been removed, and that Judge Mershon has done it right, I think that's going to tell you the whole story. And by the way, Judge Chutkan as well, same way. She's made decisions that have stood up already under review. And Donald's running around saying these are unfair. It's a kangaroo court. It's all against them. But that's not what the people who are reviewing this say at the higher levels. And these cases are going to go everywhere. Now, when I say these cases are going to go everywhere, let me also add a couple other things. Certain cases that are already being brought and that people are trying to push to the Supreme Court, it's not going to happen. There are some things that have been brought up for the review of the Supreme Court that it's just not the court's, it's not their area. It's just nothing that they have any say over. And they're not going to take these cases. They're not going to ask for them. They're going to say, no, we can't do it because it's not us. Now, the other thing is that some of this is only reviewable in the state of New York, all the way up to the Supreme Court of the state of New York. And I think you're going to see very clearly that all of that is going to be kicked back to the point where Judge Mershon's case is going to stand. The only question is, how much courage does Mershon have? And the reason I say it is because he's got until September 18th to actually tell Donald what his sentence is. And one thing he could do is he could just dismiss the case. He could say, this case will not stand up in the review, and therefore, based on the new precedents set by the Supreme Court, we're simply going to drop the case. He could do that, but I think you'll find he will not. Instead, what he's going to say is that some of the evidence that came in, which the Supreme Court would have ruled against, some of that was so unnecessary. It wasn't the basic information that caused the jury to say guilty. If Mershon believes that all of this other evidence excluded would have still resulted in a guilty verdict, then he has the right to say verdict stands. I think that's where it's going to be. And, you know, time will tell. But it's going to take 2 years for this case to go all the way through the courts to the Supreme Court. And by that time, Donald will have been deposited on the ash heap of history with Joe McCarthy, which is exactly where he belongs. Okay. I want you to go to dinner tonight, or even this weekend, or maybe every day, at Wendy's. Wendy's is in the Valley, 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road, and the food is superb. They've got wings. They've got smoked meat. They've got hamburgers, cheeseburgers, patty melts. I like patty melts, by the way. They've got baby back ribs, salads, onion rings, all so delicious. Their iced tea is excellent. I'm an iced tea drinker, and I've enjoyed it there. It's good. A lot of people make iced tea, and it's not always just right. But here, yeah, Ben's tone is perfect when it comes to iced tea. So go to Wendy's, 18,000 Chesterfield or Airport Road, and enjoy a great meal in a great restaurant with great atmosphere and a great owner. Ben and his wife, they are phenomenal. But it doesn't end there, because in defiance, they've done it again. The same great restaurant, the same great food, Wendy's in defiance is absolutely outstanding. $29.99, South Highway 94. Enjoy Wendy's at both locations, because the food is, as I said, superb. Now, when it comes to a jewelry store, Jewels on Hampton is the best. They are at 4506 Hampton in St. Louis. and their owner, Al, and his son, AJ, I'll tell you, they make it a great experience going through a jewelry store. They've got just cases and cases filled with jewelry, and it's all really top-of-the-line jewelry. And then, of course, they'll buy and sell. You can bring them coins and your own jewelry, and they're good. They will pay you cash right there. They're excellent. And they're nice people. So they do a great job, and they're nice people. And they know what they're doing. They design jewelry. They can do it your way. They can do it their way. They're creative. They're smart. They are just excellent jewelers. And then when it's all done and you forgot to do something about your watch, don't worry about it, because they'll fix your watch too. They're experts at fixing watches at Jewels on Hampton. So check them out. And finally, when it comes to men's clothing, the St. Louis Suit Company is the best. St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. If you doubt it, just check how long anybody else has been there, because the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton has been there for 29 years. They're not playing games. They just provide the best clothing at the best prices. And now, as I've told you, I've learned all about the new fashions today. And I'm now hip again because I'm wearing the right things. I've got my brand new blue jeans. I wear my suit coats from this great men's clothing store. And I've got my ties, which are just excellent. And, you know, there's just a slight change in the tint of color that you can see right now on Showdown, because, you know, Joe's always making things better, and he did. And as a result, I think if you look at my blue tie against my blue shirt, I think you're going to see that the colors are great. And it's all about the St. Louis Suit Company. That's what it's about. They are the best. They're perfect. Again, they have that perfect pitch. They know what they're doing when it comes to suits and ties and shirts and overcoats. Don't forget that, because the weather's going to change in a couple of months, and you're going to go, well, why didn't I get myself an overcoat back when the prices were low? So go do it on the corner of Central and Forsyth in Clayton. And if you're thinking about marriage, wedding attire at the St. Louis Suit Company. They're the best when it comes to wedding attire. Everybody knows it, and you will too if you go to the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. Okay. So, you know, we talked about Kamala's perfect pitch. I want you to listen to somebody. And I did this last night, by the way, but I'm going to do it again tonight. And I have a very specific reason. Because last night we had a problem with some static. And I want you to hear this on a clean program where you can hear it all. And I want you to listen to Ronald Reagan real quick, and then we'll come right back.
This, I believe, is one of the most important sources of America's greatness. We lead the world because, unique among nations, we draw our people, our strength, from every country and every corner of the world. And by doing so, we continuously renew and enrich our nation. While other countries cling to the stale past, here in America, we breathe life into dreams. We create the future, and the world follows us into tomorrow. Thanks to each wave of new arrivals to this land of opportunity, we're a nation forever young, forever bursting with energy and new ideas, and always on the cutting edge, always leading the world to the next frontier. This quality is vital to our future as a nation. If we ever closed the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world would soon be lost.
Yeah, listen to that. If we ever closed the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world will be lost. And there is a guy, and of course, remember, He was a professional actor. So you could expect nothing else but the perfect pitch that Ronald Reagan had. And it didn't matter what he said. For people who loved Ronald Reagan, they would hear those words. And they would buy into almost anything he said because he had that perfect pitch. And again, like I say, if you're a professional actor, which he was, and he was a successful actor, he may not have been Laurence Olivier, but he was certainly a fine American actor for the work that he did. And he came into office first as governor in California, which certainly upset me, and then president of the United States, which I wasn't happy about that. But listen, I, in a million years, didn't think about leaving the United States because Ronald Reagan was the president. Never crossed my mind. I mean, the only thing I ever thought about leaving the United States for was the draft. I mean, if somebody had ever sent me a notice that said, Uncle Sam wants you, I would have been straight to McGill University in Canada, and that would have been the end, because we did go there. We went and visited and set it up. We were ready to leave. And then came the ping pong balls, and the lottery went my way. I was number 252, and if you were above 125, you weren't going to be drafted. So that was the end of that. I wasn't leaving. I did help other people to fight against it and resist the draft, for sure. But having said all of that and remembering that Ronald Reagan was all into this patriotism and stuff that I didn't like ever, nor do I even like it today. I'll tell you why in a minute. But I have to say that what he said about immigrants, I don't know how I ever missed it. I'm really ashamed of myself because I usually hear things. And believe me, I did not hear this from Ronald Reagan. But you heard it. I mean, these were his words, that if you leave, the opportunity for people coming to the United States, if you leave this out, if you get rid of it, if you stop immigration, or how about this? How about massive deportation? How about that one? We got a guy who wants to deport millions of people who have been here for 10, 20 years and who are just trying to fit in and who do nothing wrong. Although Donald says that these migrants are creating a dumping ground for criminals and the insane. Now, you heard Ronald Reagan. He didn't say that. He didn't say the United States, when we had people coming in, was becoming a dumping ground for the criminals and the insane. No, he said the opposite. Ronald Reagan said what I tell you. Open the doors to these people. Bring them in. Now, the first thing I hear from somebody is, well, not the illegals. We don't want illegal immigration. Look, you can play games with this all you want, because all you have to do is pass a law and say that it's illegal to come to the United States if you don't follow this and that and some other process. You can say that's illegal. And then by the time you're through, basically what you've done is the same thing that you did to black people when they tried to vote. They said that. They said, look, black people want to vote? Okay. Just follow the process. We got a little bottle here of jelly beans. The process is you have to come in and tell us how many jelly beans are in the jar. And if you can tell us the exact number of jelly beans in the jar, then you pass the test and you're legal. You can vote. So we know this game. This is the game that they play against people who want to come to the United States. Ronald Reagan didn't say, let's let everybody in, but not the people who can't follow the process. Because believe me, the idea is to make the process sufficient to allow these people to come in. So change the process. You know, don't say that you have to come to a certain point in the border, and if you don't find that exact latitude and longitude where you're going to walk in, well, guess what? Forget it. You're done. You got to go away. No, that isn't how we do this. We don't play the jelly beans in a jar game, or we shouldn't. We should let the people come to the United States and enter our country, vet them at the border, and then I say, let's send 1 million high school graduates down to the border, and let's have them help the people who come in. Let's have them educate the people who come in, help them to learn English, help them to fill out forms so that they can sign up for Social Security. Now, when I say sign up for Social Security, I mean pay into it. I don't mean come into the United States and collect it. Pay into it so that someday, after they've become citizens and after they've made it through our society and hopefully grown enough to become successful, then they can collect Social Security too and Medicare and everything else. But only after they have been helped to fit into this country. We could do it. We don't want to. It's that simple. And believe me, I have so-called liberals, friends of mine, people who are, in theory, educated, who say the same thing. Not the illegals. We don't want illegal people coming in here. Well, okay, fine. And we don't want illegal people to vote either. But what you call illegal is the key. Because if it's counting the jelly beans in the jar, well, you see the problem? So then it's racism. And believe me, it is racism. Because these people are coming from the South are sometimes black, sometimes brown. And listen, Donald Trump has made that clear too. You can go anytime you want to Google, YouTube, and listen to what he says. First of all, he says that these people are poisoning the blood of America. And by the way, let's assume the first time that he said poisoning the blood of America, that he didn't know that it was Hitler's language. Let's say that. So then what would you do if you're Donald? You would come back to the people and you would say, look, what I really meant is that we don't want people to come from some of these other places in the world if they're going to cause us a problem in the United States. And I didn't mean to say poisoning the blood because I didn't realize that was Hitler. But see, here's the thing. That's not what he's done. He has doubled down on it. He has tripled down on it. He has kept on going. He says it over and over again. And remember, because I showed this clip the other day too, his favorite thing is, I never heard of this before. I don't know anything about it. Yeah, but he's got no problem saying that too. Donald Trump could look you right in the eye and say, Hitler? Never heard of the guy before. I don't know anything about that. All I know is I use the language. But I don't know who Hitler was, and I don't know what he said because I'm busy doing important things. See, but that's the point. He's not even doing that. He is just doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on this every chance he gets. He loves to use that Hitler language. He repeats it over and over again because he gets a kick out of it. Because I guess it makes him feel like maybe he could be Hitler. And if you think that's crazy, then you need to go to his own language again. Because if a person in the United States of America tells you that they would like the government to be the unified Reich, well, then you know that that's German language. That's not us. Americans don't talk about our government as being the Reich. The First Reich, the Second Reich, the Third Reich. That's Hitler. That's Germany. That's not us. But Donald dipped into his bag of political knowledge, which is practically nothing, but which includes whatever he learned from reading Hitler speeches at night before he went to sleep, according to his wife. Well, all I can tell you is this man idolizes Hitler. He idolizes Germany. He idolizes authoritarian government, and he wants to be, well, he said it himself, dictator on day one. Now, later on, he came back and said, I only meant that I'd be a dictator for the first day, but after that, well, I'd just go back to being regular. But look, you don't want a dictator on the first day. You don't want a dictator on the last day. We don't need any dictators in the United States, nor do we need anybody who wants to terminate the Constitution. Again, Donald said that under certain circumstances that he would feel compelled to terminate the Constitution. Well, first of all, he doesn't have the right to terminate the Constitution, not on any day, not based on any circumstances. The Constitution has to be followed. When you run for president of the United States and you get elected, you raise your hand and you say the words that are an oath. And it's not an oath to Donald Trump. It's an oath to the Constitution of the United States. And it doesn't say, we also give you one day that you can terminate it. It doesn't say that. It says the Constitution's good every day. If it said, by the way, I promise to follow the Constitution except for there are 5 days that I'm able to terminate in order to do something or other. Well, if that's in there, then you can do it. But we know it's not. There are no days that you can terminate the Constitution. So let me add this. And I said earlier I was going to comment on this. And it's this patriotism business. Because people love to throw patriotism around. And I got a big problem with patriotism. Well, first of all, you got to decide what the meaning is of the word. And I would say I'm a patriot. I'm a patriot because I believe in the Constitution. And if you don't follow the Constitution, then the government is wrong. And thank you, Michael. Glad to see you here. But let me say this. There are patriots who say that it's my government, my country, right or wrong, I am going to follow my country because I am a patriot. And I look at Germany. I look at all those flags at Nuremberg. I look at all those hands going up to Heil Hitler for the Third Reich. Remember, the Third Reich. The Unified Reich is what Donald has promised us. Amazing as that is, and if you're out there and you think it's not true, well, you better go look it up because it was right there on his, whatever he calls that crazy thing he's got that would be Twitter, but whatever it is. So he put it on there. Now, later he said, His usual thing. I don't know how it got there. I don't know anything about it. I never heard of it. Well, that's what he does. But look, here's the problem. The problem is there were only two people who had access to that. One of them was Donald, and the other is the person who Donald has hired to officially put things on there for him. Donald didn't say, I fired that guy because he put this Unified Right thing up there, which I don't believe in. Donald said, I never heard of it. I don't know how it got there. It wasn't me. It was somebody else. We don't know who. I don't know. I didn't even put it there. It was never there. I mean, those are the things. And you know I've played that clip up here where he says that over and over again because that's what he does. This is his game. His people believe this game. But there's so many people in this country who don't. They don't get conned into any of it because they know better. They've seen what he does. They've seen what's happened to him in the courtroom. They understand a $90 million verdict in favor of E. Jean Carroll, a $450 million verdict in favor of the state of New York. In Judge Mershon's case, it's not hush money. It's about election violations. There was some hush money in there, but they were election violations, which were raised to the felony level. 34 counts of felony conviction. And if you're sitting here waiting for Donald to be exonerated so that he can then become elected, let me tell you something. You're waiting for the wrong thing. You better turn back on this broadcast and listen to Ronald Reagan. Worry about that. Worry about how we're going to get some people into this country that belong here, people who are desperate to come here, people who want to survive with their families, people who want their kids to go to high school and college and become successful and wealthy in the United States. Look for those people. Stop worrying about the con game that Donald Trump is playing on you, because I can tell you that when he loses this election, he's going to be doing the same thing he always does. He's going to say it was rigged. He can say, and he will say, they cheated. They cheated me again. They do this every time. I always win by a landslide, and they always rig it against me. Isn't it funny how everything that Donald does is rigged? Of course, when he finally won in the Electoral College in 2016, when he thought he couldn't win, he didn't say that one was rigged. And by the way, neither did Hillary Clinton. She didn't complain. She didn't raise any objections. She said, you know something? I lost the election, and I wish Donald Trump the best, and I hope for the American people that Donald Trump has a successful presidency. That was her words. That was her language. And what does Donald give you? Poisoning the blood of America by bringing Africans into this country. Listen to the tape. Now, I'll grant you, he says things about other people coming here too. He says the Mexicans are murderers and worse. He says that migrants who come here are criminally insane, who are being dumped here by their countries. So he doesn't only point to black people from Africa, but he certainly includes them there. And when you see the numbers, which I've told you all along, that Donald will get, if he's lucky, 5%. Well, we'll end the show on that tonight because that's a winner. Okay. For the St. Louis Suit Company, Wendy's, and Jules on Hampton, this is Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen. You have a great weekend. Good night.